Hey, gang, I want to tell you about True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products. They are fantastic. I've been using them now for a couple of months. I've used their balms. I've used their oils to sleep. And today, I'll be talking about a whole new product. Now, listen, True Hemp Science promises you premium quality, pure ingredients, and true value. They source the highest grade organic hemp from around the world to handcraft the finest full spectrum CBD products. They offer a complete line of CBD products, including full spectrum CBD oils, tinctures, CBD skincare lotions, CBD sports rubs, CBD gummies, and CBD gluten-free chocolates. They number their CBD products to differentiate them by strain, by farm, and by extraction method. Now, last week I was telling you about the number 81, which is great for relaxation and sleep. But today I'm going to be talking to you about number G41. That's full spectrum CBG plus CBDA plus terpenes. Now, this has given me some focus. It has some CBD in it, but it doesn't make you sleepy or tired or foggy in any way. The CBG kind of gives you some focus and it energizes your brain while keeping you calm and cool. You know what I'm saying? People report it relaxes their brain and does not affect cognitive performance. While it is calming, it is less physically so than CBD. It's great for working. It's great for getting your work done. I'm even using it right now. So, gang, how did I get here as partnered with True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products? And if you use the code HDIGH, you will get something special. Purchase $65 worth of regular price products and receive 296 milligrams of number 81 distillate. That's the one I was telling you about. That's great for rest, relaxation, and sleep. Just go to truehempscience.com/HDIGH. For how did I get here? And you can also visit them at their brick and mortar store. That's right. They have a physical location right here in Austin at 505 West Mary Street, Unit C, Austin, Texas. Don't forget, use the code HDIGH. If you're already using CBD products, switch over to this one. I promise it's going to be great. You're going to love it. All these products are great. And the CBG, CBDA is unbelievable. Like I'm telling you, I feel very clear. I feel very focused. I haven't been drinking a bunch of coffee all day, and I'm not all anxious from coffee. You know what I'm saying? TrueHempScience.com, HDIGH. You're not only getting yourself some CBD, but you're helping us out here, right? By using the code HDIGH. TrueHempScience.com. Go get your full spectrum CBD products today. Let's get down. Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I actually had a really good weekend. I was off from Skyrocket, and my friend Kim had an extra badge to the Moon Tower Comedy Festival, and I went with her on Friday night and watched a bunch of comedy. It was really fun. It was really fun to get back out there and watch a bunch of people be funny. It was great, actually. I have to thank her for that. It was nice to get out of the house and go do something, walk around downtown, go to a bunch of different places, see a bunch of different comedians, see one comedian that wasn't very good over and over again at every show that we went to. But still, it was fun. It was fun making fun of her. I'm not going to say who she was because she's a perfectly good person. Maybe she was just having an off night. And I saw her too many times on that off night. other than that, Rosie and I had a good weekend. Something happened yesterday. She gashed her side. Like, she's got a gash on her side. I got to keep it covered and stop her from licking it, keep it clean. You know what I mean? I don't know how it happened. It's like a mystery gash. I don't know what happened. I went to go hug her after we woke up from a nap, and she had this gash on her side. I was like, shit, what happened? She's an adventurous dog. Was she running around? Did she run into something while we were out on our walk? Did she do something crazy at the dog park and I didn't notice and she didn't yelp? I don't know, man. Craziness. Anyway, I'm keeping it clean. It's working out. She's being good. I'm not a fan of the cone, and she is totally not a fan of the cone. Like, she is not having it. And so I did a t-shirt. I put a t-shirt on her because, you know, her thing's on her body. So she can't lick it with the t-shirt on. So, and it's covered with a bandage anyway. So no cone. I did a no cone zone. We're in a no cone zone here. All right. Anyway, gang, I want to let you know, if you live in Houston, Skyrocket is doing a show on June 3rd at Last Concert Cafe. Reason why I say that is because we haven't played in Houston since New Year's. This is probably our only show until the fall. So you might want to get some tickets while they're available. These shows do sell out. So I want to let you know, you can go to skyrockettheband.com, check out our shows, tour dates or whatever it's under, and get you some tickets for that show because it's going to be a good one. Gang, I have a great show for you today. Today we have a great show. Mike Scioni from Los Angeles six-piece indie rock, indie pop band Yoni is my guest on the show. They have a brand new album that came out in March called Truth in Fiction. Fantastic record, man. This guy's a great songwriter. The band's really great. This is like their third release. They put out an EP called Atomic Thoughts and an album called Yoni, the album. And this one's called More Truth in Fiction. You can find them wherever it is that you find music. You can also get their stuff on Bandcamp. Always good to throw these guys some money. Mike and I have a great conversation. What a cool dude. What a great songwriter, talented dude. We had a really fun conversation about his journey in music. What Yoni is as a band, because it's kind of like a collective, you know, kind of like one of those bands. I always draw blanks on those bands, but those bands that aren't like an official band that's a band all the time. It's a band of people that come together and kind of back up this one guy's vision and create this great music, which is what Yoni is. I really love their music. I don't normally have a lot of bands on here from all over the place because a lot of times, you know, you guys don't know who they are, but a lot of times I'm really, really excited to introduce my audience to maybe a new band they haven't heard of. And Yoni is one of those bands. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Mike Scioni from Los Angeles-based six-piece band, Yoni. Let's get down.
Me on.
Oh, thanks for doing the show. You're in LA?
Yes, sir.
Where in LA are you? Where do you reside, bro?
We are in Highland Park.
Oh, nice.
I live in a I live with my girlfriend in a little back house in a big aloe garden. It's actually quite beautiful.
Like a Cato Kaelin situation.
Huh?
Like a back house Cato Kaelin situation. Remember that guy from OJ?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I just did a podcast. Sorry, I forgot to put my belt on.
Don't need it. You don't need it, man.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I just did a podcast with someone that was born in 2003.
Oh my!
Yeah. So like, you could say Cato Kaelin, and she'd be like, "Who's that guy?" You're like, "Those,
yeah,
OJ."
He's like, no, that TV show, you mean?
Yeah. All right, we're cooking. Dude, this record, More Truth in Fiction, absolutely fantastic, man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, I really do. tell me a little bit about your band. It's a six-person. Is it like a, do you write the songs?
Yeah. Yeah, all but one on the album was a co-write with our keys player, Alex Zuden, and Dustin Hackworth.
Okay. How do you say your last name?
Scioni. Scioni, yeah.
I'm going to write that down.
It was originally Chona when my grandfather moved to America, and they switched him over to the old Americanized Scioni.
So that's where Yoni comes from, the band name.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
Not the female body part in.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Originally it was my name. And then I found that out. Someone told me, they're like, you know what Yoni means, right? And I was like, of course. Yeah. This is exactly what we named it after.
Yeah, exactly. Who not? My dad had this maid and she was from South America and, she would call me Señor Yoni. And yeah, a friend of mine that knew what that was, when he heard that, he fucking freaked out. Like, he couldn't stop laughing. That's when I found out what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's either really good or really bad. So.
Mr. Yoni, baby. All right. So it's a collective. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, Yoni's always been, I've always needed an outlet for my own songs. I work with other artists on things, and it's always really fun to collaborate, but I want to have that space where it's my songs that I really care about, that I'm saying the things I want to say. And, that's kind of how this band started. It was just me in 2017, recording the first album and the second EP. And I would hire out a drummer friend out in Boise, actually. And then Alex, the keys player, he heard the second EP and he was like, so like, when can I catch your band? I was like, oh, there isn't a band. You know?
Right, right.
And he goes, okay, so we're going to start a band. We're going to be a band. And he really was instrumental in like getting this whole thing going. And that's how More Truth and Fiction happened. It's our first, like, it's the first truly, I think, collaborative,
right,
Yoni project.
So tell me then your own thing, like you say, you work with other artists on what, in what capacity? Mm-hmm. What?
Well, you know, the dream is to be in the studio with other musicians producing records.
Okay.
I've been in a lot of bands. Currently I play with a folk artist, folk rock. He's kind of bends genres, but his name's Rusty Tinder, out in LA. Great pianist, great songwriter. And I had the pleasure of co-producing his latest album that's okay. going to come out in the summer.
Awesome.
Called Alchemy Road. Yeah. And that's what I love to do. I love to create songs. I love to perform, of course, but, being in the studio and like getting that lightning in a bottle feeling is like everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that comes through. I listen to your other stuff lightly, but I listen to More Truth and Fiction like quite a bit. And it's so, as I'm an artist as well, and I have like my own studio and stuff, and I've always yeah. like been like a home recording guy. And
yeah.
there's that sort of feeling to it, you know, that mm-hmm. sort of exploration. But it's also, it's funny because there's these weird sort of like, it's indie rock in its base, right? But there you go off on mm-hmm. some different sort of like, it's almost like power pop moments. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, for
and,
sure.
And like full on like 70s glam rock, like that song, You Got the Light.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. It's like our T-Rex moment.
Yeah, 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 totally.
Yeah, man. I mean, the influences are wide ranging and diverse for sure.
That's the You Got the Light. You just can't mm-hmm. like I have a number of songs like that and you can't get away from it. I mm-hmm. have songs that are so bad like that. Just really quickly, I had dinner one night a long time ago, like 20 something years ago, with this dude that was like an editor of Spin magazine. Cool. And he watched my band rehearse, and then our manager took us and him and his wife out to dinner. His wife was Michelle Shock. Do you know who that was? Songwriter mm-hmm. chick.
Shock.
She was kind of famous for a little while.
Okay.
But our manager was like, hey man, so tell the guys what you think of the band. And he goes, okay. And he just points at me across the table and says, you need to throw all your T-Rex records away. Like immediately. That's the first thing you need to do with your life. So maybe that's why I gravitated so fast to that song. But there is like,
yeah,
I mean,
man.
There's an undeniable, you have a voice as a songwriter. It's not like derivative. It just dabbles in different genres. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man.
All under the same kind of like guitar pop world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad. Hopefully the hope is that it's cohesive enough to where it feels like a record.
Oh, totally.
Because I think one of the things I've struggled with was like finding a sound, you know, and I always hated, like, for instance, we're working on Rusty's record and stuff. Sometimes we'll say things like, oh, we got to get like that country sound, or we got to get this sound, or we got to fit into this genre.
Right.
And not that he does. We've been exploring big time with this stuff, but, I've always struggled fitting into a genre, and I never wanted to, you know?
Yeah.
So we're trying to find something original. And it's like, and writing is just, you're just like, you're hearing the stuff that you love. Like, for instance, with you and T-Rex, you're starting from the place of the stuff you love.
Yeah.
And what I try to do is like the moment where I'm like, oh, okay, this is like, I feel like I'm treading done before waters.
Right.
Like, what do we do that's different? How do we like,
right,
just totally fuck them up at this moment? Like, know me both with that synth solo. It's like, how do we just totally fuck with people's heads right now?
Right, right. That's the thing is that, you know, as a producer, I imagine just like a producer in the year 2022, like,
yeah, dude,
it's tough to pull a thing out that no one's ever heard before at this point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're just combining building,
yeah,
you know, yeah. I think John, I don't know if it was John Lennon that said, you know, that famous quote of like, there's no such thing as original music at this point. Like, there's no such thing as original art. We're all just kind of gathering and broadcasting it back out, however our voice kind of tints it.
He probably said that 50 years ago, too.
Yeah, yeah, man. Well, they did it all, dude. They did it all, that's for sure.
Do you have like a manager as a producer guy?
No, I don't. I don't have any representation. Which, you know, it's something that, like, at this point, I mean, with this whole push, we did 3 music videos, we did all the art our own.
Right.
I hired a PR company.
Yeah, you did.
Planetary. That's how we met.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Which, so cool. So cool for you to listen to that and not know who we were and actually want to talk about it.
There, awesome. And yeah, don't get me wrong. I say no to stuff a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes you're I'd like to see a light shown on this band, at least, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys.
It means the world, man. It means the world. But I mean, this is the first podcast I've done.
It means the world to me that someone's out there making music that I want to hear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
I totally know.
It's hard to find music. It's almost like I'm glad I have this podcast because I can. At least people send me shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've never heard before.
No, and we're on the same wave because that's my thing too, is like, there's a lot of gaps in my music history knowledge. You know, I know a lot of stuff, but there's so much stuff that falls through the cracks because I just like finding new bands. I like finding that show, you know, I saw Haim right before they became
Haim.
The Haim sisters, they were opening for Twin Shadow at the Fonda. And I was like, what is this? Is a family? Like, they brought their parents up on stage. And that was a troubadour a couple weeks later. Brought their parents up on stage and played like some classic rock tunes. It's like, dude, these girls. And then all of a sudden they blew up.
Yeah.
Blew up.
They're amazing.
But similarly, you know, just to go on a tangent here, we're going to go check out Yard Act soon at Zebulon. Great, great group from Leeds.
Okay.
And Tau and the Get Down, Stay Down.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of them?
Oh, yeah. I've seen them.
Tau's.
I want to say that I saw them at like they were like the band to see at like South by Southwest.
Are you? Oh, sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
And so they played like 28 shows like in 4 days or something. You know what I mean? I saw them somewhere in like the backyard of some kind of like magazine party or something.
That's a dream.
Yeah.
That's a dream.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. To get back to the management thing, you know, that would be awesome to have someone, to have a Brian Epstein showing us the way, you know, but, at this point it's just us, man. We're collaborating on that. We're working with a stylist. We got a photographer who lends us tons of time and talent. It's like a community type thing we got going right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the vibe that I got from it, is that it had that sort of like, what are those bands like, you know what I'm talking about? There were bands like in the 2000s in the indie rock era that were like these great.
Yeah.
What was it? Feist was in one.
Oh yeah.
Broken Social Scene. There's stuff like that. That's the vibe that I get from your record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, my all-time favorite artist, I think, still to this day, is Stephen Malkmus, Pavement.
Oh, yeah, dude.
that vibe is just, I'm all about it.
What's that? He put out a record. I can't remember what it's called, but it was like in 2001. It was a solo record. And I remember I bought it on vinyl.
Yeah.
And
it may have just been Stephen Malkmus.
I think that's what it was. It's just him like staring out at the water or something.
Yeah.
What a genius that guy.
I mean, he's the Jim Carrey of music. I'd like to say him and like David Byrne, you know?
Yeah.
Big heroes.
So how old are you? If you don't mind my asking.
I'm 34.
Okay. So you're pretty young to be like.
No, thanks.
I mean, that Malkmus album came out when you were 11. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I found Pavement late. You know, I found Pavement after Pavement.
Okay.
Was around. I found Pavement in the time of the Jicks, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
And that's a lot of stuff. That's part of the cool thing about what's happening with music now is like kids can be cruising through Spotify and they're listening to the new Tame Impala album. And then all of a sudden they're listening to T-Rex or like some early, you know, Who albums or something like that. You can get it all.
So how did where did you grow up?
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Did you, wasn't Woxy up there? That was the radio. WXY.
Oh, I don't know.
It was like the college station for Miami, Ohio there, I think.
Yeah, no, there was one. I've got all my radio stations mixed up now. I know there was WEXP or something.
Oh, yeah, that's one for sure.
Northern Kentucky has got a really good radio station.
Yeah.
NKU. Yeah. Yeah, man, we're about to start a college radio tour.
Are you?
Yeah. Or not radio tour. I'm sorry. Radio promotion.
Yeah. Okay.
College radio promotion.
That's where...
my first time.
That's how I really liked that place where Woxy was up there because I was on a radio tour like that and they were just real nice. You know, you end up hanging out like smoking weed with like the fucking dude that works a front desk or something weird like that.
Oh my God. Just let me live that life.
So you're in Cincinnati. When did music hit you? Like, what did your parents do?
My dad's an ophthalmologist. My mom was always home with us. You know, my dad played a little bit of guitar.
Yeah.
And he's actually a great guitar player and honestly a great songwriter too. He's recently been getting into producing and stuff, which has been cool connecting with him doing that lately.
That's awesome.
It's really cool. He's retired and he's writing all these songs about being retired. And they're just great. But my girlfriend wants to call him Bobby Buffet, you know? But he always like pushed me to take guitar lessons and I did it. And I was one of those kids. I just wanted to like play sports and be around friends. And I thought I didn't want to until I was in high school, my grandfather passed away, Glenn. We were really close and I had this guitar and I knew how to play it. And I felt like writing some words down about how I was feeling. And I wrote my first song, when I was like 14 and I just caught the bug. Like I've just been writing nonstop ever since then and started a band in high school, college, had another band all throughout college and moved out to LA.
So like in the mid 2000s, you started your first band?
Yeah.
What was it called?
Yeah, I'd say my first band.
I love first band names, dude. I love them. They're always amazing.
This is going to blow your mind. The first band name was called Assumptious Flake. Assumptious Flake. And the reason was, I think our friend Danny Webb in high school would say, he's like, you know, the secret to a good band name is you have like an adjective and then a noun. Like it's just got to be like an adjective and a noun. which I don't even think assumptious is a word, but we decided that was what it had to be. We were smoking too much weed too young.
Were you playing original music?
Yeah, man. We had like an all original set that we played, and the songs were
So what was the college band name again? It was kind of crapping out during then.
The name of the band was White Roberts.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and we
why was
the,
that
the 90s. The reason at the time, which I regret, is so we were fans of Robert Randolph Band.
Okay.
We just idolized.
Yeah.
They came through Bloomington. I went to Indiana University, so they came through Bloomington, which was a great music scene there. And we were like, yeah, we're like them. We switch instruments all the time except for white. So we're White Roberts.
Oh, that's cool.
I remember they actually came through and played there. And as they were walking in, I like grabbed one of them. I was like, hey, just so you know, like my band's called White Roberts. And he was just like, cool, man. You know? the embarrassment. I love just looking back and laughing at it.
So at that point, were you like, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I went to college, on a biochem. I was going to be a biochem major and I wanted to be a doctor like my dad, you know, and, about halfway through that freshman year, I was like, yeah, no, I think I'm going to be a musician instead. So yeah, it was just pretty much my education was on stage in college more so than in the classroom. I mean, you know, still went to class and all that, but learning how to do a sound check properly, load in, load out.
Yeah.
Get home safe somehow, you know, things like that.
Were you touring and stuff around there? Were you guys playing out of town? And
we went down to Cincinnati a couple times, you know, to play. We never really took that next step. There were some bands though that we were playing with around that time that were kind of doing that thing. I don't know if you've heard of Main Squeeze. They're out there as a pretty badass jam band right now, but I remember they played their first show. It was right after us at some house party, and now they're just
wow,
blown out. Yeah.
So you were in, you're like, I'm going to be a musician. Well, here's a question I had in the covers thing. I'm in a cover band. I play keyboards in this like nice 70s and 80s super hits band. And we play a couple of 90s songs, but we got hired by Yahoo a few years ago to play this party. And they were like, can you just play half 90s songs? And it fucking gig paid insane amount of money. So we're like, okay, cool. But it was so hard to find like songs that are as fun at a party in the 90s, you know what I mean? As there were in like the 70s and 80s, like,
yeah, it's more like, well, like the grunge thing is kind of weird.
It's a bummer. You can't play a Pearl Jam. You can't play a live at a party, like in between Dancing Queen and like fucking, you know,
that's a different vibe.
Down Under.
I guess there's like Talking Head stuff in the 90s. Was there?
No,
maybe not.
They weren't even a band anymore by then.
Hey man, you got to be playing like some Chumbawamba or something.
Right. Oh, you know what? were you guys doing like Unbelievable?
Yeah, dude. We did. We went. I mean, we literally played everything from Alive and you know, My Hero, rest in peace.
Oh yeah,
Taylor
Hawkins, yeah, yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
To Enrique Iglesias and like Ace of Base. Like we did everything. There was no line drawn anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah. And then our originals, which were just,
oh, you threw your originals in it. That's a tough, that's a hard sell.
It was tough. I mean, you know, at that time though, the songs were like, they were starting to take shape. I think my songwriting especially was improving. I look back on those songs and all the friends from college were like, oh, it's great, man. Like, I love it. I'm like, no, I can't listen to that shit. But at the time it was like, yeah, I was proud of those songs and we were, and the people liked them, you know, they didn't listen as much, but
yeah,
they liked them, I think.
So how did you end up like going to LA and when did that happen?
So I really owe that to my sister, Megan, who's also in the band.
Oh, cool.
She's one of the singers in the band. And she was out here. She moved out here. She actually dropped out of college at 19 or 20, like right after her first year, and moved to LA to be an actress. And she was doing all right out here with that stuff. And I was just like kind of following her footsteps. She had a 2-bedroom at the time, which was crazy. She had this crazy rent control situation that She was paying like $600 for a 2-bedroom with a pool in LA.
Jesus.
It was weird. I don't know how that happened, but so I was living there for a bit, and I kind of got my feet underneath me out here, played some shows. And around that time is actually when I did this project called Mike's Musical Odyssey. I don't know if you've heard anything about that or if
no, what is
they
that?
Wrote anything about that. I knew I wanted to be a songwriter when I moved to LA, and I didn't know how to meet people, find a manager, even shows was tough. You know, you're paying to play shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I basically sat every day, and I wrote a song every day for a year, and I recorded myself playing it and put it up on Tumblr, like a blog, and called it Mike's Musical Odyssey. I wrote 365 songs that year.
Jesus.
And that was like, you know, the crossroads kind of moment for me. Like, I learned so much about songwriting and about like persistence. Nothing came of it. Like, people followed along, you know, and saw the songs and were like, cool. But it was like just the work ethic develops during that time.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. It's like that thing that Neil Young talks about. It's a great quote. Like they asked him, do you write when you're inspired? And he said, yeah, but inspiration usually comes after I've been trying to write a song for a couple of hours.
Totally, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's totally different things. Like the inspiration of creating a track. And I'm sure you know this, like the inspiration when you're creating a track versus the work you put in to get there.
Yeah.
They're two totally different things. Both just as important. You got to seize the moment, but you also have to make the time, you know?
Yeah. So out of those 365 songs, real quick, because I've done those songwriting games where they go like every day or every week and everybody has to turn in a song and all that shit. And those are great, man. Those are great.
I did one in Austin, actually. I joined a community in Austin. You're in Austin, right?
Yeah. Which one?
Which is super cool. I can't remember what it was.
1159?
It was a very small thing at the time. But I saw some really cool artists on there. It was a song a week challenge where they gave you like
a prompt,
a phrase.
Yeah.
And you had to write about it.
Yeah.
I did a few songs for that. Some songs I was actually really proud of, but I saw some, there's a girl from Austin named Megan Carney.
Oh, she's fucking great, man. Yeah.
She's so good, dude. I was going through other people's songs and I listened to hers. I was like, who is this chick?
Yes.
And I started following her, and she had that great psychedelic band that was going for a while. I don't know if they're still making music, but that was cool, man.
I don't know. I just saw so many people just like over the, you know, well, more like over the last year, but really like South by Southwest was like last week or the week before last.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I saw people, I felt like I hadn't seen anybody in years. I hadn't, but, you know.
The COVID thing.
So I don't know what the hell Megan Carney's doing now.
Man, hope she's still making music because she is a boss. I love it.
Yeah. So, So out of those 365 songs, are there any you still play? Did any of them come through? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? For years, I played a lot of those songs. Now, I think most of them are just kind of sitting on the back burner. Every once in a while, I'll go back and look through some and be like, you know, we could remake this into like a Yoni song.
Yeah.
And even Evan Bernadine, who's now playing drums for us, him and I there was a time where we were renting a rehearsal space. I wouldn't really call it a rehearsal space. It was more of a garage that had been split into like two rooms. And there was a guy like living in there. And we were just, there was like rat shit all over everything. We had to leave because there was black, we realized there was black mold like all in the walls and like no insulate. We're like, okay, we're going to die if we stay in here.
No.
But we were playing together as a duo for a little bit. And there was one song in particular called You Know Me Better Than I Do that we played. And I'm looking at it now going, oh, that could be a nice track for the next album. You know, we may come back to it and, but yeah, no, most of the songs kind of are in the past now, man. It's hard to come back to songs when you've moved on. Yeah.
When you were writing all those songs, were you just sitting down with a guitar and a notepad and some recorder? Mm-hmm. Were you using a drum machine or any kind of shit?
anything I could get my hands on, really. Most of the time it was acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
But when I needed that extra inspiration, I mean, there was times where I would sit there with a MIDI controller in Logic or GarageBand even.
Yeah.
The last track was called Goodbye, My Love. And it was like a Motown type thing. And I basically built a track in GarageBand that day because I was so excited. I was manic. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I had lost like 20 pounds. Like it was the most stressful year, self-imposed stressful year of my life. And so I cut, everything on GarageBand and turned out this like weird sort of Motown era goodbye song to songwriting for like a month. I was like, I don't need to do that for a while.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of regimen now? Do you do any sort of like daily thing or?
I've been playing the drums a lot.
Oh, cool.
That's my new thing. Drums have always been my passion. And I'm actually playing drums in a band with my girlfriend and our friend Emily, a trio.
Oh, awesome.
Called Dave's. Yeah, we got our first show, maybe our last, we don't know, on a Friday night at Kibitz Room.
Classic.
Yeah. It's going to be sweet, man. We're playing like just 5 songs, but they're badass, like punk kind of like, what would you call that? Riot Girl type shit.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, I'm playing a lot of drums these days.
The Kibitz Room is next to Cantor's, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, too. Right. Classic location. Classic. Like, couldn't ask for a better place to play a first show.
Yeah.
And chill vibes, too. It's a total dive. Like, you just get some PBR and rock out. It's great.
Yeah. That's where they started. Yeah, they had a scene there.
Whoa.
There was a scene.
Damn.
Or they created a scene there. Like, no one was going there. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, like, it's a scene. Yeah.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah.
And yeah, that place deserves a scene. It's a good spot to catch a show for sure.
Sounds decent
for, for a dive. Great.
Yeah. So, so you guys are doing your first, maybe last show there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about Yoni? Where do you guys play? Do you guys play?
Yeah. We actually are just getting back into it. We played our first show on Saturday night in 2 years. And we played, it's a new venue, it's at Bergamot Station in Santa Monica.
Okay.
This place called Bergamot Cafe. They set up a stage outside, have great sound, and it's like a nice sitting area for, we brought 127 people out.
Shit, that's great.
Which was like, yeah, we were very surprised.
Yeah.
And it was cool, man. So, we're getting the cobwebs off. Feels like there's a lot we could have improved on the first show, but we're going to be playing a lot more now. And I was actually going to ask you about, I should ask you, maybe not here, about venues in Austin. I would love to come down there and play some shows, man.
Yeah. There's shitloads of venues.
Yeah. Maybe do a little mini tour or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it work out there? Cause here you can, where we're located just in Austin, you're 2.5 hours from Houston. You're 3 hours from Dallas. You're an hour from San Antonio. Then, like, you're, 6 hours from New Orleans, which is, like, 3 hours from Nashville. You know what I mean? Like, it's easy to sort of be from here and...
Cool.
If you have a van...
Tour around.
Yeah, you can go play shows, and even do, like, a weekend warrior thing,
Yeah, that's going to be the name of the game for us because three of the six of us now have little kids, and full-time jobs. So it's going to be book it for a weekend out to Texas or up to Salt Lake or down to San Diego.
Yeah.
And do a few shows.
What? You have kids?
Not me.
No.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Do you have a full-time job?
My sister does. I'm a freelancer, as a music producer.
Right.
And
right.
I write copy. Have you heard of the music company Output?
Nope.
They make music software. They're growing super fast, and I write all the copy for Output.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, freelance copywriting and music production, and I also produce some visual stuff with my girlfriend Bree, some commercial stuff.
Oh, awesome!
Just hustling, trying to make a buck.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah. And there's like the thing where you can do like 28 bands. But then at some point, like, I mean, even my bros that were like the cool bass player guy that would be playing like 27 shows during South By, no exaggeration, with about, I think, 18 different artists.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine being the bass player of that? Like, you can't fuck that shit up.
No, man. I've played bass in Rusty's band a bunch, and honestly, one of my favorite instruments to play live, bass, for sure. Because it's so instrumental. It's so important.
Completely.
You can't fuck up.
Yeah.
You can't fuck
up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like as a singer.
And country bass, man.
Yeah. Like as a singer, though, don't you, as a singer, that's where I get my pitch from.
Oh, cool.
I mean, don't you?
Interesting.
On stage, that's where I get it from. I always have for some reason.
That's like kind of where you pick up, you like want that in your head the most. To kind of register where
you're
at.
My ear just gravitates to it, and that's what I sing from.
Cool, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess I probably do too. I mean, it all comes from the rhythm, right? Like, for me, I'm very drum-focused. Rhythm is like, you know, the groove being right is everything. You play a track. I've been trying to get my drummer to start playing to a click because I'm like, it's just, once you're hitting that groove and it's just right, it does something totally different.
It does.
Like you got these ropes, and if you're going too fast, you're tightening the rope, and all the little threads are being pulled too tight, and it just doesn't feel right, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm definitely very drum centric, writing and performing, for sure.
Huh. So do you play drums on recordings as well, or are you?
I haven't. I haven't. I did a little on Rusty's album. I got to do a little tambo in the studio,
nice.
Which was cool. But man, I want to. Drums is a different beast, and I want to. It's the first time I played an instrument. I'm like, I want to get really good at this.
Yeah.
You know, guitar is something. I'm like Stephen Malkmus on guitar. I just kind of like, this is a terrible note. Ah, it's fine. Let's just sit on it.
Lean,
you know?
Into it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, with the drums, it's like I would love to start tracking drums.
Yeah.
With this band, maybe. I point here because that's my girlfriend, Bri, over there.
You pointed to her a lot. I'm like, there's got to be somebody over there. Unless it's like,
yeah, she's over there.
The thought of her. Hey, how's it going?
How's it going? She's quietly working. She's producing a Corona commercial right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, she's a badass, man.
Her
name's Bri Doring.
Bri. And what's the name of the band that you guys?
It's called Daves.
Daves. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully.
Yeah, we met at that bar in Glendale, Dave's.
Oh, you guys
did? I don't
know
if you've ever been there.
No, I never have.
Yeah. Pretty tight. Pretty tight. Smells like poop, but it's great.
Oh, man. I can't stand those kind of places. last time I was there was, I think, in 2019. I played some.
What brought you?
I played a gig. Me and some friends of mine, a friend of mine. The cover band that I'm in gets gigs that are through Visit Austin. And so we go to conventions where cities are representing themselves so that people will have their conventions there. Does that make sense? So then they bring a band like Austin, live music capital of the world. And so they couldn't afford our normal cover band. So the bass player was like, oh, dude, I could throw together a couple dudes and we could do some stuff. And so we went out there and did that.
Sweet. Where'd you guys play? Probably with the convention or whatever, right?
No, there's those hotels.
Ace.
Where the,
room.
Where's the Staples Center? There's those hotels all around Staples Centers. We stayed in one and we played in another one. I can't remember what they were.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. What a gig.
Yeah, it was quite a weird gig. Those gigs are, you know, those can be weird.
Yeah.
Is that something that you would ever want to do?
Dude, I'll play anything, man. Yeah, like, except unless it's like a venue that I've played 100 times and they don't have a great deal and they don't promote it. You know, like I'm kind of over some venues. I would like to be playing more like Sarah Graham and Lodge Room and these kind of cool up and coming bigger venues. But, like we're going to play, on June 18th, we're doing one of those street food cinema events.
Uh huh.
you know, we're opening up for Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, awesome.
So, but it's like, yeah, it's getting the music in, you know, in new ears, you know, I'll do whatever to do that. And like, sometimes we'll do like this last gig we did, we invited kids to, we said, bring your kids. And we tried to keep it clean, which I had no problem doing.
How did the only naked guy at the party go? I'm sure that if I heard that when I was a kid, I would have fucked. That would have been my favorite song.
You know, the kids loved it. The kids loved it. Yeah, man. It went great. It went great, man. It was super good. I'm glad you dug that one.
Yeah,
it's definitely that's a personal one. Like my card does have an egg stain on it. Very much.
You're a really, really, really great songwriter. Are you wanting to like write with people, like be a co-writer guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I enjoy making music in any capacity, especially when I'm writing songs. And that's something like, that's part of my production style is like, when I hear a song, I'm going to tell you exactly what I think. If I think there's anything that could maybe enhance some element of it, or as long as it's within the intention of the artist, you know?
Yeah.
The songwriting is, I'm forgetting where the question started, but is a huge element for me, and I love working with others.
Well, I mean, doing like the co-writing thing where you have appointments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's like the new music world, right?
Yeah.
I would love that, man. I would super love that. I got friends in Nashville that do that kind of stuff, and it seems cool. I've had a couple sessions before with like strangers where it was just really weird, you know. They like come in and they're like, you start a track playing and they're just like, like for like an hour. And they're like, you got anything?
Yeah.
Like, no, I can't. Cause you're just humming next to me incessantly. So the co-writing I do is usually I meet somebody I vibe with, like you and I, we connect, I can tell.
Yeah.
Simpatico. We would probably sit in a room and write really well.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of friends that I trust writing it. I would love to do more of that. And that's kind of, you know, I drink a lot of coffee, man. I'm talking a lot.
Me too. Well, thank you for doing that, because this would be a shitty podcast if you hadn't.
I was exhausted this morning too, because we went out and caught Alt-J last night at Staples Center.
Oh, how was that?
Arena. Unfucking believable. Have you seen Alt-J live?
I've never seen Alt-J live.
It was Cherry Glazer, which we regrettably missed, because I love Cherry Glazer. Portugal the Man, I love.
I love them.
And Alt-J. And I went into it, we both went into it, like, we heard Alt-J's new album, we're like, oh, God, like, I don't know if I'm feeling this, you know? And I was like, well, Portugal the Man's cool. Portugal the Man was pretty underwhelming. And it was the second time I've seen him in the second underwhelming show, which was a bummer. But Alt-J brought the heat, and they had this crazy visual setup, and the songs were so clean and full with just a three-piece.
Yeah.
You know? One of the best audiovisual experiences of my life, no doubt.
Oh.
But yeah, that's why I was going to say I was thinking I wouldn't have anything to say. I was going to be like tired. And,
right, right.
But, you know,
you're like, I'm doing my first podcast. I got nothing to say. Let's just start drinking that coffee, man.
Yeah, dude. The juice.
You guys don't have a website, right?
No, it's kind of Instagram promoting streaming services. I got to start a Bandcamp.
Okay. Is there any way you can send me your Instagram? Because the Instagram account that is linked to your thing goes to a thing that doesn't work.
Oh, really? That's crazy. Oh, you know what? Yeah, the PR team, I got to update them on that. We changed the handle around when the album came out. But yeah, it's
this we'll album
connect and
yeah, this album's fantastic, man. Really, like you're a fucking great songwriter, and yours like you color outside the lines in my favorite way. You know what I mean?
Thanks, dude. That means a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So there's going to be a next album.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah, I got some stuff going. Yeah. I'm like, I got licks. You know, it's funny because I had this urge one day to, I heard for some reason that the phrase catatonic bliss came up, mm-hmm. and it kind of cracked me up. And I'm like, I would love to make the next album a collection, because I have a few already, like 6 or 7 sad songs. I would like to do a collection of sad songs called Catatonic Bliss.
That's a great name.
thanks.
Yeah.
And because, you know, as people have pointed out, we like to set the depressive against this kind of exuberant feeling, you know, and, yeah. And write about sad stuff and make it fun. So that's the hope. But I like, I got one of the songs is just called Misery, you know, it's about misery. And, yeah, so I think I'm hoping to push it that way. Obviously we're going to get together in the room and jam out a little more. I think this next time we'll have a lot more jam inspired.
Yeah.
Group made songs.
It's fun to go in that direction sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got it. It's time to take this thing off of my shoulders and be a group and, yeah. you know, do it all together.
Yeah.
I think so. And everyone's up for it. Everyone's excited. So yeah, it'll be cool.
The Yoni Crew. That's a big band to have to take out on the road. Definitely, like, yeah, if you're looking at Austin and looking and you have any questions, hit me up, because I also work with the Austin Music Foundation, which is a nonprofit that
kind of
gives free mentorship to artists here.
Really
but
cool.
But there's lots of resources there as far as like clubs and all this kind of shit. So, yeah.
Yes, please. I don't know what's the best way to get your information, but we should definitely keep in touch.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll say goodbye and then hang out for a second, and I'll give you my info.
Right. Sounds good.
Well, dude, a great talking to you.
You too, man. Yeah, man. Thanks, Johnny.
Yoni, everyone, check him out. More Truth in Fiction is the record you're going to want to listen to right away.
Yeah, brother.
All right. It's a long, dark, beautiful life. All right, okay. That's Mike Scioni from the band Yoni. Their album, More Truth in Fiction, available now. More Truth in Fiction, available now wherever it is you stream and download your jams. Great conversation with Mike Scioni. Fantastic conversation. Hey, gang, when you're out there checking out the band Yoni, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere. Let's listen to the rest of the song, Leave Our Heads Behind. Sorry, what am I even saying? Leave Our Heads Behind from the album More Truth Than Fiction from the band Yoni. Have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.